This is USA Radio News.
If your New Year's resolution is to be healthier, it all starts with a good night's rest. MyPillow's best offer ever has been extended. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, you'll get the lowest price ever MyPillow has offered for their four-pack, free shipping, and their 60-day money-back guarantee has been extended through March 1st. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, use my promo code USA to get two premium MyPillows and two go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
The Super Bowl takes place Sunday in Atlanta, Georgia, between the Los Angeles Rams and New England Patriots. Marshall Faulk won the Super Bowl with the St. Louis Rams back in 2002, and he tells Fox News the team that can handle the distractions the best, they're usually the team that wins the Super Bowl.
You're trying so much and so hard to make it a normal week, a normal game.
That's not going to happen.
That's it. It's not normal. And you're trying to suppress all your feelings and all of your emotions. And hopefully you have someone dealing with your family and all the other stuff that's going on. And you get to focus on football, but it's not like a home or away game because you're right. Staying in a hotel all week, which you never do that.
Right.
There's just so many things that are different, but the team that handles all of that stuff the best, it's the team that usually wins.
There's also been some chatter that Tom Brady isn't quite what he once was at 41, to which Faulk says,
oh, he's better now. He's more cerebral.
He's better now.
He's better now. Yeah, he's more cerebral, understands the game, and he's going to take what you give him and then beat you with that. Because you think, oh, you know what? We're not going to let him throw the ball deep. Well, he can throw it short and beat you. Okay, right. We're not going to let him throw it short. We'll throw it deep. You know what? We're not going to let him throw it. He'll run the ball.
It's no surprise that Faulk did pick the Rams to win the game. Now, if you're still looking to go to the game, you better get your pocketbook out, as the average price just to get inside the stadium, right around $2,800. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Beowulf Rocklin. Well, that great cinematic classic, The Wizard of Oz, was originally released 80 years ago this year, 1939. It's going to be returning to select movie theaters across the country January 27th through 30th as part of Fathom Events 2019 TCM Big Screen Classics series. It is going to be hosted by Ben Mankiewicz, TCM host. For more information, you can go to fathomevents.com/events for tickets, for more information, and we're very privileged to have with us again Ben Mankiewicz, TCM host. Ben, welcome back to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
always good to be with you. Thanks for showing interest in these Fathom events, but we love doing them.
I love going to see them. I love TCM, watching Turner Classic Movies, of course, as well. One of the things that I note about The Wizard of Oz is that whereas I'm a huge classic movie fan, I love Gone with the Wind, I love any number that you could name from that same era, from the 1930s, from the 1940s, sometimes there's an element which you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit on in terms of how it plays today. The film doesn't always age well. There's a part of it that seems clunky. And I cannot think of a single part of The Wizard of Oz that doesn't age well, that you couldn't just show to any person of any age today in 2019. Why do you think it has aged so well? It's amazing in that regard.
Well, it's a children's film, and children's films, you know, are I don't know that they always age better, but they're generally safer. Mm-hmm. Not always. You know, it just hit a sweet spot. I don't think there's any, as you say, there's no particular magic to The Wizard of Oz, certainly no planning for what happened with The Wizard of Oz and its tremendous ability to sustain its fan base over what is now 80 years. Many people, including myself, have a lot of trouble with Gone with the Wind today. There are obviously many, many other classic movies, just movies from 1939 that, you know, generally considered, and I think justifiably so, Hollywood's greatest year, at least the Hollywood studio system's greatest year. The Wizard of Oz, you know, has this magical quality, and it still feels magical. That's a big part of it, I think, is that what was magical and fantastical in 1939, it has not really been eclipsed by progress, right?
Right.
I mean, yeah, we could make Dorothy's transition from Kansas to Oz a little more fantastic if it were made today, but it's still pretty fantastic, right? I mean, it still created a world that seems fantastical and as fantastical in 2019 as it did in 1939. And the evidence that it did that was the slow progress of it. The movie didn't do that well at the box office time. It wasn't that. It wasn't so critically well reviewed, and then it didn't get into any foreign markets because the war came.
Right.
And then slowly in the years after the war, but really in the years after the war when people bought televisions and it started airing on TV, that's when it caught on and was given the praise that it should have had all along.
That last part that you mentioned is amazing to me. I know that it certainly had many theatrical re-releases over the course of the decades, but to know that in the 1950s and 60s, when most of the televisions across the country were black and white ones, that it still, in spite of the fact that it didn't have the amazing dimension of color and that visual aspect to it, and it was still holding people and their attention and their interest, really says a lot about the film, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert in the conversion to color, but, mm-hmm. you know, as more and more people were buying big color TVs, I suspect that made a big difference when it came around. I suspect then also that many people who knew it and had seen it on television or in re-releases, the biggest coming, I think, in the 50s, early 50s, and then when MGM started realizing there was money to be made in these properties, still had. I'm sure some people were dazzled because they'd seen it on TV before, and now all of a sudden they're seeing it and on a color television, and it just seems, it must have seemed amazing to people. And that's still, you know, and the fact is, if it were made today, I mean, I suspect the Kansas scenes would be in black and white, and the Oz would be in color. They'd still do it. Yeah. It's a great idea, for which, like, literally 38 people take credit for.
As I'm
including
sure.
including my grandfather. He's one of the people who says it was his idea.
Okay,
he wasn't really known to be a liar, so I'm going to go ahead and give him credit. But Mervyn LeRoy would disagree. But obviously, making it black and white was a great idea. You know, it's tough because this movie had four directors and something like, you know, around 15 screenwriters.
Right.
You know, and a crazy casting history, and the fact that it came together in the manner that it did is really a testament to the studio system and a testament to the artists, the craftsmen at MGM, who the behind the scenes, below the line people who put the picture together.
We're speaking with Ben Mankiewicz, a host of Turner Classic Movies. We're talking about Turner Classic Movies' big screen classics re-release on the 80th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz. You can go to fathomevents.com/events for tickets and more information. It's going to be coming up here January 27th through the 30th. It's interesting that you bring up what you just did. A lot of different people claim to have done that. So many different people were involved in the production, and often when you have multiple directors and casting difficulties, I know that Buddy Ebsen was originally going to be the Tin Man, and he couldn't do it because the makeup involved in that made him ill. It really could have been a disaster, and I know that films such as, you look at Casino Royale in the 1960s, it came out so unscathed in the final product. Why do you think, with all that chaos, this managed to survive? Was it just pure dumb luck, or was there something essential about this movie that caused it?
Like I said, I think that when a studio like MGM, but obviously others working at the top of their game, when those craftsmen, it's the art direction, the costume design, and the sets, and obviously the color too here. So when those people were allowed to do their jobs properly, and then of course we're leaving out Frank Baum. I mean, he wrote something magical, and many of the lines that we quote from The Wizard of Oz, and it has something like 20 memorable lines. Many of those are right out of the book.
Yeah.
He'd been unsuccessful. Baum had in almost everything he had done in his entire life. He had a bunch of failed businesses, and right before he published The Wizard of Oz, the first of 15 books in that series, I think he filed for bankruptcy. So he had been a failure in a number of things, and then he started writing children's books and sort of found this magical spot. So he gets a tremendous amount of credit for giving them a really great story, which was hard to screw up no matter how much of Hollywood bled into this. And, and trying so hard, Mayer did, to get Shirley Temple, and then sort of settling for Judy Garland, as you mentioned, Sondergaard out and Margaret Hamilton in as the Wicked Witch, and Buddy Ebsen as the Tin Man. But Buddy Ebsen was actually the Scarecrow, and Bolger as the Tin Man. And then they switched, and then Ebsen got sick, and Jack. But the story was so good, and the artists and craftsmen below the line were so good that I think it came through. And all the directors. I mean, it was Thorpe, Richard Thorpe, and Cukor, and Victor Fleming, and then King Vidor. Fleming is credited, but so they lost two of their directors to Gone with the Wind. Both Fleming and Cukor left to do Gone with the Wind. So, I think we should not leave out that probably most of the credit is because the story was so perfect.
I know that I go through the Folger editions of Shakespeare, which I've read since I was in high school, and each of those at the end has famous lines from Hamlet or Macbeth or what have you. You could really have a Folger edition of The Wizard of Oz, and there's so many cultural catchphrases, so many touchstones that come out of that. He really did lay down an amazing map for this film to be made. We've been speaking with Ben Mankiewicz, host of Turner Classic Movies. The Wizard of Oz, originally released in 1939, will be returning to movie theaters across the country between January 27th and 30th as a part of Fathom Events 2019 TCM Big Screen Classics Series. You can go to fathomevents.com/events for tickets and more information. And I look forward to talking about some of the others in this series as the year goes on. Ben, thank you so much for spending the time, and really looking forward to bringing the kids to this movie.
Yeah, I'm great. I'm glad you are. Yeah, 2019 is a big year for us, so thanks. Always great to talk to you.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Beowulf Rockland.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story.
The law states that no person shall convert or attempt to convert any person from one religious faith to another. And yet not one missionary has been charged.
When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India.
Leprosy is the veil behind which Staines operates, the tool he uses.
A journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You bring me evidence of illegal conversion, I'll give you a permanent position.
One day I'll find the proof of him converting the tribals.
We can't make any mistakes.
They have this law for a reason.
Hello. We must pray.
Based on the incredible true story.
You can still write the truth.
What is the truth?
Write about the work, not about me.
The Least of These. The Graham Stain Story. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st with a special sneak peek Thursday, January 31st. For theaters and tickets, go to theleastofthese.movie.
Mike Hewitt here. Just a question. Did winning the Cold War provide us with a generational-sized unintended consequence? Seriously, are we better off without having a common enemy, an evil empire, an opposing superpower with a socialistic economic engine crushing government authority over its people in a complete absence of anything like our Bill of Rights? Yep, there it was, working devilishly hard to remind us of all of the things we should never allow our Union of States to become. And now the American left calls for an end to what freed so many from abject poverty, even as they embrace much of what we once stood together to denounce. Capitalism won, socialism lost. That's a fact, and yet many in academia and our media are working hard to fool a generation into believing things that just aren't so. Find the Mike Hewitt Show on Facebook and tell us what you think.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody just...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. But first, the strange news of the week. A Chinese zoo is making some extra cash and promoting education by charging guests $145 for the privilege of cleaning up polar bear poop. That's right, a zoo in China is offering the service once a week to adult guests interested in spending 3 hours experiencing the life of a polar bear keeper. They're so smart. Now, when I received the book of the person that we're about to interview, whose title is Bad Choices, I assumed at first the topic was the 2016 election, because what else could a book entitled Bad Choices be about? But it turns out that it's actually about
Algorithms. The full title is How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. Ali Al-Masawi, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. So, to paraphrase the subtitle of Dr. Strangelove, how do I learn to stop worrying and love the algorithm? I mean, what are these things anyway? What are they doing when I do something like perform a Google search?
Absolutely. So an algorithm are these processes that have a start and they have an end, and they have these unambiguous steps in between that do something useful. So within the context of computing and computer science and throughout its history, you see that these algorithms have done all kinds of useful things. And presently, whenever you think of an app or a website, you know, there's undoubtedly going to be a lot of algorithms behind the scenes doing a lot of useful things, the result of which you see on that website or app. So what I was interested in exploring was to see if we can frame those concepts in terms of everyday decisions that we make. And by doing so, showing how, you know, it can be useful to think in terms of algorithms and how it can be useful to use some of the tools that computer scientists use to decide if an algorithm is good or not. In everyday life, to decide if a decision is good or not.
So we typically think of an algorithm as pertaining to a Google search, you know, results that come up, something like that. Obviously, there are many other contexts, but give us an example from real life, or at least ordinary day-to-day human life outside of the Internet that sort of illustrates how an algorithm works.
Absolutely. So the book has 12 chapters, and in each of the chapters you find a scenario, a VNet, and there's a character there, you know, that has to complete a task. So in the first chapter, the character is trying and has a pile of socks, and she's trying to match those socks. So the question is, how does one go about doing that? And I asked my daughter, who is 5, and she said, well, you take one from the pile, and then you look for its pair, and then so on until you find all the pairs. So that's one approach. Another approach, you know, is a bit more efficient. You take something from the pile and you put it to one side, and then you do the same for all the other socks. And so by using memory in that case, you have an approach to completing that task that performs much better, especially when the number of things that you're working with, socks in this case, grows.
You know, I think I'm kind of up the creek without a paddle either way, because whenever I sort my socks regardless, you know, I have black socks, I have a drawer full of them, and whenever I sort them, it's just incredible how many, like, single socks are left out of different, you know, textures, patterns, sizes, you know, the top ribbing is different. So I don't know if algorithms are going to help me there, but I can see how it would help an ordinary person. I think I just might need an app for that. We're speaking with Ali Al-Masawi. He's the author of Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. I always get a secret little pleasure whenever Netflix or Pandora throws something at me that I don't like, and I feel like, I've triumphed, you know, they haven't figured me out yet. But my life has never been made truly difficult by an algorithm that didn't fit. Are there examples of algorithms getting it wrong in a significant way, and how do we avoid those? How do we improve the algorithm?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your example just now of Netflix is one of many. What a lot of these websites and apps do is they use what's called link analysis to determine what we might like or who we might know and so on. So a lot of the times, you know, there are limitations to these approaches, and it gets even worse once we get into the realm of machine learning, where humans are building models that describe, you know, the world to us. You go to a machine, and that machine tells you, you know, all about the world based on how, you know, it sees it. So the problem with that is that, you know, humans have biases, and they inadvertently or maybe sometimes intentionally inject those biases into these algorithms and models. So one has to always be critical, not take anything as read, even when it's coming from a machine.
In a situation like that, would you tend to purely rely upon an algorithm? Is there a way that you could adapt it, or do you occasionally have to throw in something outside of that process in order to get a result that is truly going to match someone and make, I guess in this case, a consumer happy?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some mission critical and more serious cases, like the healthcare, defense, for instance. There are other more sophisticated ways to ensure that the result of an algorithm is kind of consistently sound. There are more formal approaches to that. In other cases, there are more human-involved approaches. So in addition to what we get from a model, there is also the human element. So say in medicine, for instance, a physician has to kind of review the what the machine says. So I think even going forward, when I was reading about, you know, what the future might look like, there seems to be more or less an agreement that the future will be one where there are machines and people kind of both contributing to some extent, rather than one being replaced by the other.
Well, that it sounds positive, but still, every time I go on healthcare.org, when there's the section where it says you may also be interested in or other people bought, single payer never comes up. So I, you know, until we reach that stage, I'm hopeful that we can still attain a positive future. We're speaking with Ali Al-Masawi, the author of Bad Choices: How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. You are a data visualizer at Apple. Does that mean you have a bumper sticker on the back of your car that reads "Visualize World Data"? What exactly does your job entail?
Yeah, it's a fairly new field that kind of came about in its current form about 5 or 6 years ago, and I would say, a lot of it has. There are similarities between the field and what I do in my job and kind of what I do in these side projects, and that's. That in both cases, I'm trying to take something that someone has created or some set of concepts and think about how can we make them more accessible to a broader audience, or in some cases to a specific audience. So with data, you know, there is the raw material in that case is, are these tables and numbers and so on. So how can we decide what's useful in that set, and then how can we present it and communicate it in a way that's engaging and compelling?
Interesting. So you're basically the guy who decides how many football fields of money would constitute the national debt.
Yeah, not quite, but that is the idea. I mean,
you have to humanize the data. You have to make it. I mean, these numbers are so large. You can intellectualize what they are and understand them, but for your average person, they have to have some standard of comparison.
Oh, in that sense, absolutely, yes. It is a lot of it has to do with that, right? Not only transforming the data, but also thinking about, exactly, you know, how can we reframe it in a way that's familiar?
The book, again, is Bad Choices: How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. If it were on Netflix, I would give it a 5-star rating. Ali Al-Masawi, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Up next, what really happens when you get swallowed by a whale or shot from a cannon or go barreling over Niagara and then you're dead. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The real problem is we need something. We have to have a very strong barrier. But we're building a lot of wall right now as we speak, and we're renovating a lot of wall. And we're getting ready to give out some very big contracts with money that we have on hand and money that comes in.
President Trump making remarks at the White House after holding a meeting on human trafficking along the southern border. And as far as declaring a national emergency, the president says,
but we will be looking at a national emergency because I don't think anything's going to happen. I think the Democrats don't want border security. And when I hear them talking about the fact that walls are immoral and walls don't work, they know they work.
Former mayor of Newark and current New Jersey Senator Cory Booker says he's running for president in 2020. The Democrat is joining the very crowded field already, hoping to knock off President Trump. You're listening to USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. More strange news of the week. Chimpanzees in the news. And their poop. A grandma left a Michigan zoo with an unexpected souvenir after being struck in the face by a ball of poop. Video shared to YouTube by Jacob Mitchell shows a chimpanzee at John Ball Zoological Garden in Grand Rapids swaying back and forth in its enclosure before hurling the ball of feces up toward the crowd above. Members of the crowd laughed as a gray-haired woman turned toward the camera as the chimp's excrement hung from her nose. Very strange news this week. Now, I have with me the two authors of, I think, what is probably the best and most interesting named book that I have ever discussed during the course and the history of this program. The title is What Really Happens If You Get Swallowed by a Whale, Are Shot from a Cannon, or Go Barreling Over Niagara, and Then You're Dead. And that's all on the front cover of the book in the same size font. I love that. It's bright yellow. It's fantastic. And we have with us today Cody Cassidy and Paul Doherty to discuss it. Gentlemen, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you, Derek.
You guys got the idea for this book from the section of The Perfect Storm by Sebastian Junger, where he tries to describe the final moments of the men on the doomed boat. And being the sort of morbid individual I am, that's the section that I gravitated towards first before I read any of the rest of the book. To explain to people, he didn't know exactly what happened. He theorized about all the physiological effects you would undergo if you drowned in a boat in a storm. But you're not talking about storms. You're talking about getting shot out of a cannon and barreling over Niagara and such.
Yeah, it started out as I loved that section, and I loved the physiological detail and the science that went into it with sort of in a level of detail that I hadn't read before. But then as we started working on this, we sort of realized that we didn't want to do things that usually happen to people, like car accidents or heart attacks, because that was too serious for us. Right. We wanted to keep it a little lighter. And you can get into some really interesting physics if you start talking about digging a hole to China or visiting Mars.
Naked.
Yeah, things like that. But that was absolutely the inspiration.
So take us through one of these scenarios. What would happen if you dug a hole to China and jumped in?
Right. So, no, that's a classic introductory physics problem. And everybody just says, oh, yeah, just evacuate the hole and jump in and no problem. But they forget a few things. So, for example, if you don't evacuate the hole, if you dig the hole to China, and by the way, for leaving from most anywhere in the United States, you don't end up in China. You end up in the Indian Ocean. So there's going to be water,
man,
on the far side. But say you forget to evacuate it and you jump in. Well, you know, when you go up a mountain, the air gets thinner and thinner and thinner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you go down in the hole, the air gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And you go about 1% of the way, and the air is as dense as water, and you stop falling.
So it's basically like South Florida.
That's like South Florida, that thick air. Oh, man, I tell you. And then, so you get rid of the air. Okay, now you're good. But the other thing is, somewhere you're in the United States, the surface of the ground is traveling east at a few hundred miles an hour, and the center of the earth isn't. So as you jump into the evacuated hole, you've got to slow down by a few hundred miles an hour by rubbing against the wall of the hole. We're talking road rash to death. This is bad news. And even if you survive that, say you put on a nice Teflon suit and the walls of the tube are made of glass, so you slide really nice, then it gets warm. You know, you go down your basement, it's cold, but if you go down in like 2 miles down in a gold mine in South Africa, it's hot. It's 100 degrees.
There's the whole molten core of the Earth, too, that you would have to pass through, isn't there?
That's exactly right. And it's actually the center of the Earth is hotter than the surface of the sun. So you're going to be well done, cooked, if you coming out the other side. But we did discover that if you wanted to do it, get rid of all the air, go from the pole where you're not moving fast, and go from pole to pole, and you're still going to die in the heat.
Oh, man. Okay, it sounds like we chose the wrong one. By the way, I know that you chose the one that's like the physics problem that's talked about all the time. I guess I took the wrong physics class in high school or college because I never got offered neat suppositional problems like that. I think you guys came up with a fantastic one. By the way, where do you have to dig from to go straight across to China? Did you guys ever figure that out?
Yeah, we did. So if the one place you can do it is... if you go from Hawaii, then you end up in a game reserve in Botswana. It's like the only place in the U.S. you can go dirt to dirt.
Wow. You guys have done your research. I am very impressed. We are speaking with Paul Doherty and Cody Cassidy. They are the authors of What Really Happens When You Get Swallowed by a Whale or Shot from a Cannon or Go Barreling Over Niagara and Then You're Dead. So what method of dying would be your least favorite, gentlemen, at least of the ones that you have posited here?
Well, you know, going down with the James Cameron to the bottom of the Marianas Trench, and then...
now, is that because of the pressure or because of James Cameron?
Well, it'd probably be good talking to him about it, all those movies he has in his brain. But, yeah, but say you just can't take any more conversation with James Cameron. You've got to leave, and you open the door to the sub. The pressure down there is so great. It's just going to squeeze all the cavities in your body, every hole in your head, your lungs, your intestines, just going to crush them down. By the way, you're going to look cool. You're going to look really good when you're dead because you'd be so thin. But there you are, squashed, can't breathe. 4 minutes later, you're dead, you're drowned. But the good news is you're so dense, you stay down there at the bottom. And then these organisms down there filter around, and there's one called the bone-eating snot flower, which looks pretty good. It normally eats whale bones, but there you are. You got bones. I mean, it's going to make an exception in your case.
Wow. Okay, I think I'm going to avoid James Cameron for the time being. But, gentlemen, thank you very much. I'm kind of glad that you chose the Cookie Monster scenario, which I think is the last one in your book, primarily because I've seen Cool Hand Luke, and I think your scenario is far more relatable than trying to eat 50 eggs in an hour. I mean, people want cookies. They don't want eggs if they're going to eat a bunch of them. So I laud you thereon.
Oh, yes. I think 60 cookies would be a far more preferable death than 50 hard-boiled eggs, at least tastier.
I think so. And I think, you know, we all relate to Cookie Monster. I think so. What did your family and friends, how did they react when you told them that you were working on a book with the title that it has and with the upshot that it has?
Well, I think if you quickly follow up with a couple of examples, people get the picture that it's not maybe as morbid seeming as it might appear on first glance. When you start talking about being at the bottom of the ocean or inside Earth or visiting Venus, I think people start to get the picture that it's more about sort of a fun exploration of science and not sort of making light of something that might actually happen to you.
And I'd live in a world of geeks and nerds, and so they'd immediately give me five more scenarios. Well, while you're so good about figuring these things out, what happens if you walk naked on the moon, Osiris? Figure that out.
Yeah. And Paul, you work for the Exploratorium, don't you?
That's right. I'm a senior scientist at the Exploratorium, and you were saying about high school physics teachers?
Mm-hmm.
I teach high school physics teachers how to make science class more fun.
That's fantastic. I dissected a cow eyeball at the Exploratorium many, many years ago when it was still in the old building. As a matter of fact, although I have taken my kids to the old building, I still have not been to your new facility. So I do have to get there, and I apologize for not having gotten there yet. I know you guys must have like made a whole bunch of improvements, but it was fun back in the day too.
We have, and when you come, I'll give you the tour. And let me tell you, the the cow eye dissections gets voted the most memorable and the most disgusting of all the exhibits in the entire museum.
Which is completely in keeping with what really happens if you get swallowed by a whale or shot from a cannon or go barreling over Niagara, and then you're dead. Cody Cassidy, Paul Dougherty, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Eric.
All the
best. Bye-bye. Up next, we speak with Annie Jacobson, the author of Phenomena. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
On Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
If you are a baby boomer with 200,000 or more of investable assets, this may be the most important 60 seconds for your retirement. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we transform typical portfolios that depend on speculative growth into portfolios that generate sustained retirement income for life. And right now, we're offering the latest book from our founder, David J. Scranton, Return on Principal. Plus, as an added bonus, our retirement income kit, packed full of valuable information, absolutely free. So if you are a baby boomer with 200,000 or more of investable assets, call 866-913-1234 right now for your free book and retirement income kit. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisory firm. In retirement, it's all about generating enough income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies. The secret to a great retirement is our middle name.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. More strange news of the week, ladies and gentlemen. The owner of a Florida video game store is challenging a town law that prevented him from displaying an inflatable character, Mario, outside his store. Scott Fisher, owner of Gone Broke Gaming, was required to move the 10-foot inflatable Super Mario that once stood outside his store or face a fine of $100 for each day it remained. Fisher received support from Institute for Justice and filed a federal lawsuit against the city, claiming the law violates the First Amendment to the Constitution. Today we are speaking with Annie Jacobson. She is the author of Phenomena, the Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigation into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis, also the author of Area 51, The Pentagon's Brain, and Operation Paperclip. Annie Jacobson, welcome back to Now It's the News. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So, in the wake of the Snowden revelations, we know that the government is monitoring our telephony. Given your book and their efforts in the field of mentalism, is the government also monitoring our telepathy as well?
don't think their interest is civilian. I think that it's, and this is after looking at the documents, that it's really about intelligence collection of foreign assets.
What caused them to go in this unusual direction to begin with?
What I found fascinating when I was researching and reporting the book is that the government's interest in this arena goes all the way back to year one for the CIA, and that was 1947 when the agency was created. And that's because the Nazis had an obsession with the occult. And everything that the Nazis were doing in terms of weaponization, the Americans and the Soviets wanted to borrow, and did borrow, and built upon. And so we found this cache of documents called Das Annenerbe. They were Himmler's pseudo-science department documents. We got half. The Soviets got half. That's where the psychic race began. But what I found most interesting in all this research was that this stuff is still going on today. And that was unusual to come across, because the idea, the consensus was, and certainly that was being put out by DOD, was that this had all ended in the 90s with the remote viewing program.
But, you know, that's fascinating. We're speaking with Annie Jacobson, the author of Phenomena. You just mentioned a sort of psychic space race. And of course, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we were in a space race with the Soviet Union to kind of maintain a competitive edge in all military-related affairs. What is the state, or what was the state, I guess it continues to be, the state of the psychic space race?
As far as the space race, you know, the analogy, I think, was this idea that anything that the other side is doing, we have to be ahead of. And the idea of divination, because let's face it, that's what ESP is. It's divining. It is non-scientific. It has not yet reached a general theory. Therefore, that's why it's called pseudoscience by hard scientists. And so it's in the hypothesis stage. Nevertheless, as CIA reported in documents, as did DOD, there is incontrovertible proof that this phenomena happens, you know, in a fickle nature. And so they're trying to collect and to know the unknown. I'll give you one little detail. I came across a program that had never been reported before that the Defense Intelligence Agency, that's DIA, our DIA, was running, and it was called Project P. Well, the P stood for prophecy. They were trying to see if they could have psychics predict the future of certain moves by certain enemy nations.
That's interesting. I wonder if they could use that same technology to predict what their budgets will be in any particular year, because they don't seem to do a particularly good job of that.
And I'm sure that's part and parcel to the problem, because all of this is working under extreme special access programs. We're talking really restricted protocols, black budgets, and things were kept secret, by the way, for two reasons. One, because they wanted it to remain secret from the Soviets, and like from the Iranians, for example. And two, because there is an extraordinary amount of stigma attached to this. I mean, congressmen did not want to be revealed as being the ones who were supporting this kind of, right, you know, very out there investigations.
Do you have a sense of how much money we have spent historically and how much continues to be spent on these programs?
Well, it's certainly minutia compared to, let's say, the subject of my last book, which was DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Those hard science agencies are spending billions of dollars, literally, and those are just the budgets we know about. So the psychic phenomena programs are in the tens of millions. It's really a very, a morsel, if you will, of the kind of budgets. But then again, you don't know where these programs overlap with other programs. For example, you know, ESP has reemerged in the modern era at the Pentagon. Only now it's disguised. They don't call it ESP. That sounds far too supernatural. They call it anomalous cognition. And the research is being led by neurobiologists, you know, computer engineers. So who knows specifically where the budget allotment is coming from? Are the budgets coming out of the neural research, or are they partitioned off to the anomalous cognition programs? I don't know, and that is unknowable. We need a psychic to tell us.
We're speaking with Annie Jacobson. She is the author of Phenomena, the Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. You say that early in its history, the CIA dispatched one of its scientists to Mexico in search of an elusive hallucinogenic mushroom. Can you confirm or deny that Timothy Leary was working for the CIA?
Leary was at Harvard, and that Leary's work was a whole decade later. I mean, the documents that I unearthed in the Library of Congress demonstrate what I believe are the earliest CIA programs in what they called psychopharmacology, but we can call hallucinogenic mushrooms because that's what they were. And the CIA, indeed, as you pointed out, had sent a scientist under cover of being an anthropologist to Mexico with a team of civilian researchers in search of this elusive drug that allegedly opened the doors of perception. So it was this old Aztec legend that the shaman, the local shaman, so the man who allegedly had the divinatory powers to begin with, would take this hallucinogen and would and the powers would be enhanced. And this shaman would be able to tell you everything. These are quotes from the CIA documents, which I just love. The way of the future, or who stole your donkey. That was a direct quote, right? So you can see both the big picture applications for CIA, you know, who will win the war, versus, you know, who stole your donkey, the sort of real practical application of this, if it could work.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And of course, what the CIA is looking for is considerably more complicated than that, unless they're looking for Premier Khrushchev's donkey or something like that, presumably. How many of these programs are still going on? To what extent does this still continue now?
What I was able to bring to the fore was the fact that organizations like the Office of Naval Research went on record stating, yes, we do have these programs. But we call, you know, that are, for example, advanced perceptual competence. That's essentially the new name for ESP. Hmm. That program was born of a situation in Iraq where you had soldiers who were in the field on the ground who said, don't go, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is in essence what happened. Don't go down that alleyway. Mm-hmm. I have the sense there's an IED there. They'd send a robot into the field, and of course there would be an IED there. That soldier then gets studied. So you can see, the Defense Department is now very interested with the advances of technology, looking at the brain, how it works. And again, going back to that idea of the magic mushroom, okay, can we enhance this through either psychopharmacology or other means?
Interesting. So in a way, they're just trying to kind of extend intuition through technology, if you want to phrase it in a non-woo-woo sort of way.
I think that's a perfect way of phrasing it. And that was really kind of the aha moment for me, where I realized, this is not as much about someone with a turban sitting around and saying, you know, I see war on the horizon, as much as they're looking at this biological process that some people have, where they have an intuitive sense about things.
Do Agents Mulder and Scully ever get frustrated that you keep going back to them again and again as sources for your books?
You know, I tell you, truth is stranger than fiction. That's always the bottom line here. And I find all my work as a national security reporter, you know, I like to go to the more controversial subjects. I'm not afraid of kind of opening those cans of worms. I try to interview people on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what do you find? They have tentacles of truth amongst these conspiratories that really interest people on a cultural level.
Annie Jacobson, the author of Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Now It's the News. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails.
At Budget Blinds, caring is in our DNA. It's the way we do business every day. It starts with exceptional customer service, a process that is centered around you. We listen to you, take the time to find out about your needs, then guide you through a beautiful selection of custom window coverings to find the very best options for you. Our commitment to caring continues throughout our local neighborhoods. We care for our homes and our communities. Budget Blinds supports so many different causes all across North America. We're your local neighborhood experts. We live and work right next to you, and we do it all for you. If that's the kind of personal service you've been waiting for, call and see for yourself. 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Or find us online at budgetblinds.com. While you're there, find out more about the Budget Blinds commitment to giving back at #BudgetBlindsCares. Each franchise independently owned and operated. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is insisting that a massive border wall be built.
We have another wall that's under construction, and we're giving out a lot of contracts. So we're building the wall. It's getting built one way or the other.
Talking at the White House today, President Trump again called on Congress to give him billions of dollars to finish that wall. The president calls out Democrats once again over border funding.
6 months ago, we really started going to town because I could see we're getting nowhere with the Democrats. We're not going to get anywhere with them. It's going to be a part of their campaign, and I think Nancy Pelosi should be ashamed of herself.
Longtime Trump ally Rogers.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is insisting that a massive border wall be built.
We have another wall that's under construction, and we're giving out a lot of contracts. So we're building the wall. It's getting built one way or the other.
Talking at the White House today, President Trump again called on Congress to give him billions of dollars to finish that wall. The president calls out Democrats once again over border funding.
6 months ago, we really started going to town because I could see we're getting nowhere with the Democrats. We're not going to get anywhere with them. It's going to be a part of their campaign, and I think Nancy Pelosi should be ashamed of herself.
Longtime Trump ally Roger Stone heads back to court today in Washington, D.C. for a status hearing. His appearance comes one day after prosecutors started working to share evidence they've collected against him as they prepare for trial. Stone was asked if he plans to cooperate with the special counsel.
All I can tell you today is I will tell the truth.
That audio courtesy of MSNBC, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
The Trump administration's pulling the nation out of another treaty. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes explains.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made the formal announcement on Friday morning that the U.S. is withdrawing from the decades-old nuclear treaty with Russia, known as the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. He says Russia's been violating it for years.
Russia has jeopardized the United States security interest, and we can no longer be restricted by the treaty while Russia shamelessly violates it.
The treaty had been signed by then-President Ronald Reagan. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees is talking about missing the Super Bowl after a blown call in the NFC Championship game.
I've lived my life by worrying about the things that I can control. I know there were things that happened in that game before and after that call that were within our control, that we could have done better, that would have resulted, I think, in a win.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Cars that sound like this. Trust Pennzoil Synthetics to protect their engines in extreme conditions. Top racing teams know that Pennzoil Synthetics give them the performance to help them succeed. And your car's engine deserves the same. Because your daily commute is no less important. Get complete protection for top engine performance just like the pros. Visit Pennzoil.com/rebate to save on Pennzoil Synthetics. Terms apply.
Republican Senator Rand Paul has been awarded just under $600,000 in a lawsuit against a neighbor who attacked him back in 2017. The jury awarded Paul just under $8,000 in medical damages, $200,000 for pain and suffering, and $375,000 for punitive damages. Paul joins Fox News and says he's just happy to have the situation behind him.
You know, my wife and I have had a tough year, me in particular, physically, and I'm still here.